JB from Santa Monica.
Wow. Now, who on this?
Thank you.
Hi, everybody. I'm Mickey. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
I'm probably an addict. Real happy to be here amongst you sick months. God, I can tell. I can tell the sick ones. I can tell them. I know. It's like looking in the mirror, man. Yeah. God, I'm real glad to be here. Real glad to be here. Yeah. Real glad to have this book here with me, too. This book that I love so much. And real glad to, you know, have the friends acknowledge me and thank me for coming here. Yeah. I want to thank the people that I, you know, show up for. Thank Robert for inviting me here. Thank Mike and April, his good wife, for being my host and hostess this weekend, and they've treated me beautifully. Happy Easter to you all. And I want to thank Walt, you know, Ted, for taping these meetings and stuff. You know, we have these tapes and, you know, I'm real glad about that, not only because I love the sound of my own voice anyway, but I mean, yeah, you know, they do, Walt's got encore tapes here, and Ted's got his tapes, and they've been a source of great message carrying adventure all over the world, you know, and I want to just mention that for a second. And we're so blessed here in Southern California to have the gifts that we have in sobriety that they don't have everywhere else. You know, they just don't have that everywhere else. As an example, I'll give you, I was invited to talk at Long Island, New York, just a little while ago. And during the conversation with the secretary, I asked her, is it going to be taped there? They said, what? What do you mean taped? I said, is anybody going to tape the damn thing, cassette tape? They went, oh no, what about anonymity? I went, what? What do you mean you don't have tapes out there? And they haven't got tapes in Long Island, New York. You know, now that's not the end of the world. You know, I spoke at this big meeting there, and I started off the talk by saying, if you got sober in Southern California like I did, AA everywhere else sucks. You know, the program and the message is the same everywhere, but, you know, we are so blessed to have what we have here. You know, and the people we have here and the attributes. We don't. Sometimes people say we're lucky, but I don't say we're lucky. We're blessed. You know, if a dude like me relied on luck and it suddenly ran out, what do you think I'd do? No, I'm not lucky. I'm blessed, and I'm real grateful too. Blessed and grateful. You know, and I love that. I love being a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love being part of it. I love being a small part of a great whole, like our wonderful traditions tell me. You know, our common unity comes first. You know, personal recovery comes a close second. I love that. I love that. Just love that. You know, I love this beautiful book. I try not to give opinions from this podium. I know we hear people say, everything you hear from me is strictly my own opinion. Yeah, I don't like opinions. I know you're a sick bunch, I can tell. I don't like opinions. This beautiful book don't talk about opinions, you know. It talks about experience, strength and hope. So I don't know what they're talking about. I feel like saying, your opinion, shove it up your douche. You know, I love the experience like this book talks about. And of course, what have I just done? I've just given you an opinion, right? You may not think this is a beautiful book. You know, I describe it as a beautiful book, and I do, and I love it. You know, I love this book. I love everything about this book. You know, I love everything about this beautiful book. You know, I love the colour of it. I love the blue colour, the infinity colour. You know, I just do. I love the size of it, you know. And I love the touch of it and the feel of it, you know. I love the name of it, Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous. I love the name Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I just do. It just has a very special ring to me, you know. It just sounds beautiful. Alcoholics Anonymous. I love the sound of alcoholics. I love people who say Alcoholics Anonymous a lot. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous. It just rings, it rolls off the tongue beautifully, you know. Well, it may not lot to you, you know, because I understand that. You guys speak funny, you know. I can understand that, you know. It's a bloody lovely smashing day, ha ha. screwed up the old sign over here. Yeah, you know. But I do. I love this book, man. I love this book. I love the... Look, you know, I screw around with words. Some of you know that. And I love the name, Alcoholics. Alcoholics, like I am. You know, I'm an alcoholic. And that's what the birth word of this is, Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I love that. I love our third tradition, which states, you know, alcoholics carrying this message. You know, and I protect that tradition of anonymity. I love that too. But our third tradition... You know, which is one alcoholic relating to another alcoholic. It's what it says here, look. A-L-C-O-H-O-L-I-C-S. Alcoholics. You know what that means to me? A life centered on helping others lives in complete sobriety. You see, and I like that. I dig that. And that's what it means to me. It may not mean that to you, but it means that to me, you know. And complete sobriety... You know, it takes on a different meaning to me from being completely sober. You can be completely sober just by not drinking and using, and that is, of course, the foundation of it. But complete sobriety takes on a new meaning for that. You know, and I like to give back what I was freely given. You know, and this freely given gift has turned into a grant. You know, and as you know, with a grant, you give back. You pay back your grant. And that's what I'm doing here. You know, it's trying to stay on the path. For you new people that are trying to get on the path, I want you to know you're trying to get on the path, I'm trying to stay on the path, and together we can walk this path. And that's what we do here. We come to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings and we relate one alcoholic to another. You know, and I'm extremely proud and privileged to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Oh, here's my ticket here for the raffle. I tell you, I'm not going to be talking about cured up here tonight. I can guarantee you that. I just had a lesson in that. You know, this lady came up and asked me to take 5 tickets out of this basket. You know, I went, what's that? She said, for the draw. I went, oh, what do you think the first thing I reach for? My own ticket to match it up. You know? She said, it's going to be one of your tapes. I went, well, I want it anyway. It didn't matter what it was, you know. So I'm telling you, we're not talking cured here. You get the picture? Like, I was feeling a bit nervous, so I've been around a couple of years and I know what to do when I'm feeling nervous. Go and have a couple of cups of coffee. You know? If I don't die from my nerves, I'll vibrate to death. So, you get the picture, you know, we're just not talking cured. Recovered, but not cured. You know? I do that by coming here, you know. Coming to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings and being a part of Alcoholics Anonymous. I love that. I love it. I love it. I love carrying the message. Incidentally, I just had a brainstorm. These tickets are blank on the back. I guess you've all got one, right? I think we could probably make a suggestion if we wrote our numbers on the back of these tickets and gave them to those newcomers. Where are the hands of those newcomers that are here tonight? Let's see these hands here. Can you take note of these hands? You guys who are not raising your hands, take note of these guys who are raising their hand. Look, why don't you write your number on the back of one of those tickets and give it to one of these guys? We need you guys. And here's a couple of numbers. My number, incidentally, is 213 area code 453-2730. Okay, and I appreciate your calls. I love getting your calls, you know. I had a lesson in that as well. The guy called me 3 o'clock in the morning a little while ago. Now, I can talk, believe me. But he called me up, and this guy had watched around the rooms a little while, and he was completely closed down and shut down and you know, growling just like I was. And I used to give him a number, and he called it up 3 o'clock in the morning one morning, and I said, yeah, what's up? Let me get a little bit wakier and see if we can sort whatever you want out. So he talks to me. Talks to me for 45 minutes. Now, when I tell you that I can talk, but my contribution to that conversation was maybe 20 words. Maybe. A couple of uh-huh. Is that right? Uh-huh. I get it. Okay. You know, you get the picture. And for 45 minutes, he went on and on and on. And at the end of 45 minutes, you know what he said? He went, God damn it. He said, this does work. They told me you knew what you was talking about. So you get the picture?
Yeah.
So, like, I'm real happy for that, and I need those calls, you know, and I remember how sick I was when I got here. You know, when I can tell you, perhaps the best way I can tell you what I was like when I got here, well, one of the things I was not, I was definitely no bloody vision for you. You know, you can believe that. You know, I wasn't glued together very well when I got here, and, you know, and I didn't know that. You know, I didn't know I even had a disease. I didn't know I had a disease called alcoholism. You know, and that little disease called alcoholism, you know, that little word at the end of alcoholism is ism, which is ISM, and that's ism, never wasm. You know, and ISM can mean one or two things to you. You know, it can mean one or two things to me too. ISM, if you look at it the way I do, can mean incredibly short memory. You know, with an alcoholic like me, where it comes to alcohol, I have this incredibly short memory when that disease starts talking to me. Anybody relate to that voice that goes off in your head? Anybody got a voice that goes off in your head that talks to you? A voice that just said to you, what voice? That voice. Yeah, you know what I mean? You know, that voice that says, you're not an alcoholic. You're not really an alcoholic. I mean, if you was as bad as that dick over there, you'd be an alcoholic. But I mean, no, you were just going through a rough patch. You know, you just, now that you're over the hump, you could have a little cold one. You know, do half a loot just to get through the edge, you know what I mean? You know what I mean? And then we forget. We have this incredibly short memory of what we're doing here and, you know, what brought us here and the degradation we went through, you know, as a result of it. You know, and we forget and we drink again, don't we? And that voice that wants us drinking, that disease, the disease that wants us drinking and using again, that's all it wants us doing, is to drink. It wants my time from me. You know, it wants my time. You know, that's what the disease wants. We hear about quality sobriety and we hear about serenity and all that. This disease don't want all that. This disease gets all that as a package deal if it gets you drinking. It wants you drinking again and does anything to get us drinking. And we have that incredibly short memory. Even sober, man. Even sober, we do actions and we do things sober. Me and Mary, my friend Mary, you know, we talk about it. The stuff we do sober, the dysfunctionality that we do sober, you know, in sobriety, you know, that causes us to go back eventually if we don't get in touch with it. You know, ISM can also mean I sabotage myself. You dig it? Don't matter what with. You know what I'm saying? I sabotage myself with anything. You know, Mary, she's funny as hell. She talks about it. You know, anybody relate to spending money you haven't got? Like credit cards, for example. You know what I mean? Credit cards. I got a whole pocket full of credit cards today in Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, when I got here, I didn't have them. I didn't have credit cards when I got here, lest they were yours. You know what I mean? But, you know, I mean, I'll spend money I haven't got. You know, so will Mary. She used to go out on these binges of spending. You know, how about food? How about eating? You know, I'm trying to pay attention to sugar and food and fitness and stuff like that. But, you know, I'll binge out on stuff. I got love handles no one's grabbing. But it don't, it don't stop me eating. You know, I'll eat myself silly cookies and candies and stuff. What about sex? Any compulsive sexos here? Yeah. And the rest of you lying mothers. Yeah. You know. Oh yeah, we're compulsively used sex or anything else, you know. Mary's funny, she says, you bend me over a counter of I Magnum with a bag full of Oreos while you're screwing my brains out and I'm a happy camper. So we're not talking cured up here, right? We know that. No. Okay. Well, I didn't even know I had a problem when I got here. I got to Alcoholics Anonymous 15th of January, 1983. I never drank from that very first meeting. I never went to the meeting in order not to drink, and I never drank since. You know, I'm a blackout drinker and user. Any other blackout drinkers and users here? Yeah. I'm going to ask some more questions. I've got a feeling you can leave your hand up back there. I can tell, man. I can tell, yeah. But I didn't know what a blackout was. I wrote a little word for this disease. It's a disease called denial, right? A disease of denial. Wrote a little word which denial means. D D-E-N-I-A-L is how you spell denial, right? Stands for me. Don't even notice I am lying. Oh, you relate to that, huh? Ah. Yeah. You know. And our beautiful book talks about rationalization. You know, rational lies. Can you dig it? Oh, I can rational lies anything to make me come in out smelling like a rose, you know what I mean? And our magnifying minds. Got a magnifying mind. My sponsor talks about it in his story in this beautiful book, you know. And our misconceptions. When I got here, I was under these misconceptions. Me and the truth were like that, like separate, you know what I mean? Never knew anything about truth. You know, and I got here. Well, for a start, when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I gained 15 years. You know, I was actually 40 years of age. I thought I was 25. You know what I mean? Running crazy. I thought I was 220 pounds of rippling muscle with a 12 inch dingaling. You know what I'm saying? It's the truth. Misconceptions, magnifying minds, you know. I had to keep coming back, and you guys soon put me in the picture. You know, you let me know that actually I was nowhere near 220 pounds. Oh. So you get the picture, right? So I says to this guy, I tells this guy at first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, he told him a little story. He said, yeah, he was in a blackout. I said, what? He said, yeah, that's a blackout. We call that a blackout. What do you think came out of this rigorously honest mouth of mine? No, I wasn't. I wasn't in no blackout. Didn't know what it was, but denied it anyway, just in case. Yeah. No, I said, I weren't in no blackout. He said, yeah, we call that a blackout. I said, no, I was awake. I was moving around doing stuff. He said, I said, blackout, idiot, not pass out. I went, oh. See, I didn't know that you know, did stuff in blackouts. I thought blackout may have been like you threw a wobbly and passed out somewhere. You know, I didn't know you did stuff. Like travel. Anybody travel in a blackout? Come out of a blackout in a place you don't even know you've been or shouldn't be? I did that all the time. You know, it's awfully easy to realise, you know, when you come from London, England like I do. I'm from London, England, by the way. That's why I talk like this. You know, alcohol didn't do this to me. You know, I can't blame this. You go out drinking in London, England, and it's cold and damp and foggy and miserable weather. And you come out of a blackout and it's sunny with palm trees. You know something's happened. You know what I mean? I came out of a blackout once walking down the street in Spain. You know, now I'd lived in Spain a couple of times and I knew Spain, but I didn't know what I was doing there or how I got there or what the, how long I'd been there, you know. It didn't stop me, though. I went, oh, hi, Spain. Straight into a bar, carried on, you know. Didn't make any difference, you know. I didn't know what a blackout was. I didn't know what a blackout was, and here was a guy who did tell me, and the best I could do was deny it. You know, I didn't know. Didn't know anything about that, you see. And I'd had blackouts all my life. All my life I'd had blackouts and never even knew what they was, you know. And I didn't know how to control them. I didn't know how much to drink to go into a blackout, or how much not to drink so I wouldn't go into one, or how much to drink to go into a little one, or a thin one, or a, you know, I didn't know any of that. I didn't have any control over when I was going to go into them. I mean, if I could have done, I probably would have done. I mean, I can probably remember lots of times round about Wednesday where a nice little 3-day blackout to see me up to the weekend would have been very nice. You know what I mean? But I couldn't. I had no control over when it happened or what drink put me into a blackout. Maybe you can relate to the fact that, you know, some days I'd drink a whole fifth and not even feel it, and another day I'd have a couple of beers and start feeling like woozy. You know, so I never knew what drink was going to put me into a blackout. But I do remember that it never ever happened conveniently. You know what I mean? I never ever had a convenient blackout. You know what I mean? And I never ever came out of a blackout in any other way other than described in this beautiful book. Pitiful and incomprehensibly demoralized every single time.
I never ever came out of a blackout happy, joyous and free. You know? It just never happened. I never ever came out of a blackout heading up a charity show. You know, or, you know, giving a kid a toy, or, you know, doing something nice for somebody, you know what I mean? It just never happened. It just never happened. And yet, you know, another thing, I never ever looked in the mirror before going out at night and thought, oh, well, tonight seems like a good idea to go out, get drunk, go into a blackout and ruin every decent relationship I've ever had. I never said that. But it happened over and over. Like our first step says, powerless over alcohol. Powerless over alcohol. And that's what I am. Because it made me do stuff that I didn't want to do, including drinking it. You know? Including drinking it. See, I was... Not what I'd done when I drank it. You know, people say that... But no, that's alcoholic addictive behaviour. When I drink alcohol, I do stuff. That's not the powerlessness that I relate to. I relate to the fact that I'm powerless over alcohol because I can't not drink it. And when I drink it, I do things that I don't want to do. See, not what I do when I drink it. See, I'm powerless over alcohol. Powerless. See, and I know that beyond any question or doubt. You know, that is the guiding light for my sobriety, the foundation of my recovery, the first step. And life being unmanageable, I didn't know anything about life being unmanageable. I didn't believe that. I had all kinds of rationalizations to cover that. You know, but the truth of the matter was that I was alcoholic. I didn't really have any big deal, you know, like... admitting it, like the 12 and 12 says, you know, who cares to admit? I didn't have no big deal about that, really. Everybody I knew I was alcoholic. I went home and told my friend, I said, hey, guess what, I'm an alcoholic. I'm powerless over alcohol, my life's unmanageable. He said, no shit. I mean, like, everybody knew it anyway. I was the only one running around with this delusion of grandeur, you know? That same guy that I said that to was like the guy that propelled me into Alcoholics Anonymous. He's still out there. He came and visited me last week from Amsterdam. He's an international crook and living on the fat of the land. He's like got mega bucks. Hasn't got a damn thing I want. But what he said to me propelled me into Alcoholics Anonymous. And he said to me, I know it won't happen again because I won't be in your company when you're drinking anymore. And I went, what? Screw you. Oh, that's all I could say. I didn't know anything else to say. Yeah. And like when he said to me that, I didn't know what he meant, and I couldn't remember. I'd just come out of a 2-day blackout, another 2-day blackout, and he was pissed off. And this guy had known me since we were 5 years old in the Blitz during London, during the bombing and the Second World War. And like I didn't know, we'd robbed and cheated and lied and screwed our way around the planet a couple of times, and it was this man saying he wasn't going to be in my company anymore. And I didn't know what he meant, and I felt hurt, and I felt lonely and guilty and remorseful and anxiety ridden and fearful. Anybody relate to any of that? Yeah. See, so I came out of this blackout and I don't know where I've been and what I've been doing, and that Rolodex is going off in my head. You know, where was I and what did I do? I'd come out of that. I'd been in that state many, many times. You know, in many, many occasions, and always felt the same. You know. And I anybody relate to coming out of a blackout the following morning with someone you don't even know? You know, laying there next to you. Anybody relate to that? A long time ago, I realised that I never ever went to bed with an ugly woman. You know what I'm saying? I never once went to bed with an ugly. You know? But they changed overnight. You know what I'm saying? I long ago realised I could drink somebody good looking. You know, around about 26 bucks worth of booze would make anybody good looking. You know, and I distinctly remember one morning waking up and there it was. I went, get out. She said, you get out, this is my house. And kicked me out. Oh, man. And kicked me out, you know. Oh, one more time. And one more time, I come out of this 2-day blackout, and I don't know where I've been. I've set off, you know, on Sunday afternoon, and now it's Tuesday, and I don't know where I've been and what I've been doing, but I know it ain't right. You know, and my best friends give me a blank, and I call up this other man. Now, I didn't know nothing about the process that works in Alcoholics Anonymous, process that works well if you're alcoholic like me. You know, and this process was in motion, and I was being 12-step, never knew that. You know, and there was a guy, an English rock and roll singer you all know, was 12-stepping me. And he had 2.5 years sobriety. You know, and I called him up. And he was laughing. You know, and I said, what are you laughing at? And he said, you, he said. I said, why? What are you laughing at? He said, like, have you spoke to Mickey? My other friend's name's Mickey. I said, yeah, he's really pissed off. He said, yeah, and he laughed again. I said, what are you laughing at? He said, don't you remember? I said, no. He said, yeah, I know, I was there as well. I said, what? He said, well, he said, it all started after you peed in that lady's dinner. I said, what? He said, you don't remember that restaurant where you up and peed in that lady's dinner? I went, oh, God, no. And I didn't remember peeing in no lady's dinner, you know. And yet I would do stuff like that, and then I'd go back into that restaurant the following night, you know, not know what I'd done, and they'd say, how the hell have you got the balls to come back in here after what you've done? I'd go, what are you talking about? I wouldn't know, you see, and so it went on and on and on. And this particular day, the process was working. And this particular day, I came out of a blackout in front of my coffee table, and on my coffee table was this book and some literature and some AA a meeting directory and stuff. And the girl that I was renting the bedroom out in this apartment I was living in had been busted on a drunk driving, and she'd been sentenced by the courts to go to meetings, and this was the literature she brought home. And this meeting directory was there, and I picked it up, and there was a meeting just down the road from me in West Hollywood, down San Vicente Hill, a meeting of Architects of Adversity. You know, have you tried cigarettes for that? Must work. You know, I mean, everybody who's got one of those hacking coughs, they all suck on those white things. They wouldn't do that if it didn't work, would they? The only time I smoke these days is when I don't use Vaseline. From the tape, Ted. Get that off the tape. Sure. I'll picture some old lady in North Carolina or something here and that. I don't know. God. Yeah, maybe she'll call me. I don't know. Oh dear. Oh dear. Better get serious, yeah. Anyway, so I didn't... Did anybody have selective hearing when they got to Alcoholics Anonymous? See, I had selective hearing when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't hear what was being said all the time, you know. I heard alcohol, alcoholics, okay, alcoholics, Alcoholics Anonymous, all right, no big deal, I don't really mind. You know, alcohol, it's all right, I don't care. Never drank again from the first meeting I come to. But you see, I didn't hear what was going on. This selective hearing I had didn't tell me that it was all mind-altering chemicals. See, we're so blessed here in Southern California to appreciate our recovery is that we talk about it being all mind-altering chemicals. Those people who took their birthday cake today, you know, free and clear of all mind-altering chemicals from the neck up. That's not the case everywhere else, my friends. That isn't the case everywhere in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't like to have to tell you that, but it's true. A lot of places in Alcoholics Anonymous don't adhere to that. Alcohol. That's it. Alcohol. You know, I've been to meetings in Miami a little while ago. Blitzed out of their tree on pills, claiming they were 10 years sober. The lady who led the meeting in Paris recently claimed to be 5 years sober. Blitzed out of her mind on light hallucinogenics and anything else. Hadn't drank. You see, here we talk about it, and I'm glad that we do, and we're blessed to be able to do that. I'm an alcoholic. Everything about me is alcoholic. There's not just like a part of me alcoholic, or a big part of me that ain't alcoholic. I'm a total alcoholic. Everything I say, do, think, and feel is alcoholic. You see? So I don't know what it means when we're asked to refrain from talking about things other than our alcoholism. I don't know what that means. And apparently you guys don't either, because I ask you, as I'm doing now, if anybody in this room tonight knows what that means, I welcome and invite you to tell me at the end of the meeting. What does it mean to an alcoholic to refrain from discussing anything other than his alcoholism? I don't know what that means, you see. I know that when an alcoholic is having a problem at work, you know, with his employer and his workmates, and he's like screwing up there, you know, and he's talking about it in an Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, we don't tell him to get out. He's an alcoholic, and we know that when somebody's in that kind of state, they're that far away from drinking. You see, it's part of their alcoholism. When the alcoholic is abusing his children and spending the money his family needs. You know, we don't tell him to get out and go and talk about it at Child Welfare Anonymous or any of those other anonymouses, do we? You see? Because we know that when an alcoholic is in that area, he's just that, a nasty away from drinking. You see? And an alcoholic to drink isn't in a healthy state. So why would we tell an alcoholic that's craving the desire to smoke pot, for example, why would we tell him to get out and go to another program? See, that's not where it's at. I don't know about you, but I never ever heard the term drug of choice until I came here. Did you? I never once heard the term drug of choice until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I cannot imagine being backstage at a Rolling Stones concert or somewhere and someone coming up to me and saying, "Hey dude, what's your drug of choice?" It never happened. I certainly can't imagine being backstage, say, at a Zeppelin concert or something, and someone saying, "Mick, you want to come and fire up some of this good dope?" And me saying, "Certainly not. My drug of choice is Jack Daniels." It never happened. Drug of choice? I don't know what that means. Drink of choice? I don't know what that means. My drink of choice was the next one. Wasn't even the one I had. It was the next one. Drug of choice? If I had a drug of choice, you know what it was? Yours. You dig that? Yours. See, I didn't know what drug of choice. I never heard that before. Drug of choice. Yours. And that was usually followed by, "Is it good and will you front me some?" I didn't know that. Didn't even know how to drink it. My sober birthday is May 8th. Right, I'll be 8 years clean and sober, May 8th. The last drugs of any kind I did was a line of cocaine at a party on May 7th. And so today I count May 8th as my sober birthday. Because I never drank from the very first meeting I ever went to, January the 15th. Never drank from that day. And never went to that meeting to quit drinking. And to my conscious knowledge, I'd never ever tried to quit drinking before that time either. See, not like this beautiful book talks about, we stood at the turning point, half measures about us, nothing. That isn't my experience. I never done that. I know it's not everybody's, but that's mine. You see, I've never gone in and out and out and round and round and done all that. So it's not my experience. I never tried to quit, and the very first time I went to a meeting, I never drank since, January the 15th, 1983. But I didn't hear that it was all mind-altering chemicals. It certainly couldn't have meant pot, for Christ's sake. I didn't have a problem with pot. I liked pot. I wish I'd had pot when I was 5 years old, for heaven's sake. I did everything better on pot, you know. Got spiritual on pot. You know what I'm saying? I used to love smoking up a doobie at 5 o'clock and be peeking at 6 and turn on the TV and have Kung Fu come on. Do you remember? Grasshopper. You know? I didn't have a problem with pot. See? I suppose it might have been a problem. I don't really think so. I mean, I smoke pot all the time. Some mornings I'd wake up with a sore arm on a bed full of pizza crust. But, I mean, well, it made me horny and hungry. What can I tell you? You're a sick bump. This is delicate stuff I'm talking about here. I mean, I'd smoke up a doobie and, like, sit and look at my foot for 4 hours. How about that other old expression, you know, just been sitting here, expanding my mind. You know what I'm saying? Expanding my mind. You know, didn't think I had a problem with pills. See, I found out about all this stuff by staying here in Alcoholics Anonymous and not drinking and using and coming back. You see, that's what I found out about. I don't advocate that, you know, you go out there and try it again. One of the most overrated statements in this program is, "I had to do it again." You see, you haven't got to do it again. If you're sitting in this room, stay here. This is where it's at. This is the happening, this gig in town, man. You ain't got to try it again. All those people that go out and do it again, "Well, I guess I had to do it again." It's not true. There is nothing to learn by going out and trying it again that you can't learn by staying in. Nothing at all. I know it sounds controversial, but it's true. There's nothing to learn by going out there that you can't learn by staying in here. Nothing. And you ain't got to do it again. No, you have not. You know, that's not true. You see, and I never knew that I had a problem with pills. You know, speed, crank. You know, anybody do a little crystal in here? And the rest of you lying mothers. Yeah, I know. I can tell the old jaw grinders. You know what I'm saying? I didn't have a problem with speed crank. It had adverse effects on me. It made parts of me disappear. Oh, you know what I'm talking about. Oh, sure, it broke down all my inhibitions with women. I mean, I could go and talk to women, like, talk, like a machine, talk, you know. But I might as well have said to you, come home and talk about sex, there's no chance of getting any. Didn't have a problem with cocaine. Love cocaine. Do anything for cocaine except pay for it. I don't know why I'm paying for it. Heroin, didn't have a problem with heroin. Liked heroin. Only took the social kind. I know, my pal told me, he said, you was a social user, he said, every time anybody said, I'm going to get down, use some dope, you said, social eye. Get it? Social eye. Joke. I didn't care if I nodded out on you. Boom. I didn't care if I puked on you. You know, I'm a puker, man. I'll puke anywhere. I'll puke right there. You know, like that. That's what I did. I puked. I didn't care. I'd puke on you and then look you in the eye. Because if you wanted to fight, that was a bonus, you know. I mean, I didn't care. As a result of my puking experiences, you know, I know that there's no such thing as a high bottom and a low bottom. I know that today because of my puking experiences. See, I've been to Buckingham Palace twice. Twice I've been to Buckingham Palace, and twice I went into a blackout and puked on the Queen's lawn, man. Like that. On the Queen's lawn. Twice. Not once. Twice. When I escaped from England and arrived in New York, February the 1st, 1978, on every known law enforcement agency in the world's most wanted list, right? And I get to New York, and I was going with a black chick then from, she was backup singer for Tom Jones at that time, and she was visiting her mother in Jamaica, Queens, right? You know, if anybody knows New York, they know, you know, Jamaica, Queens is a special area. And we went over to her mum's, and of course we partied. We were activated in our disease, and we partied at her mum's house as well. And what do you think I did in her mum's house? Got down, went into a blackout, puked on her lawn too. So I puked on the Queen's lawn, and I puked on a lawn in Queens. It didn't matter where I was. You know, there's no such thing as a high bottom, low bottom. You know, people tell us that, but it's not true. You know, oh, he hasn't hit bottom yet. Not true. Not true. You know, just not true. There's no such thing as a high bottom, low bottom. Everybody, it's my belief, everybody in this room's bottom was exactly the same. And I tell you exactly what my belief is, and that is that this, our bottom occurred somewhere way back then, like in my case, way back in my teens, when as a result of drinking and using, something said to me, you better watch that. You better not do that again, or that's trouble ahead of that. You're in trouble over drinking and using. That's your bottom. Anybody here not said that? Lying load of mothers, yes. See, that's your bottom. But we don't do anything about it. This beautiful book talks about it, though. You know, many of us could have stopped in our earlier days, but who's likely to? You know, that's our bottom way up there. But the ironical thing is that most of us don't do anything until we get right down there. And we're, like, you know, selling it on the Broadway or bleeding out of every orifice or some other degradation. But that's not our bottom. That's how far down we go before we do something about it. But our bottom actually occurred way up here. And anybody who's sitting in this room right now, believe me, you're ready. We people say, oh, well, he's not ready yet. What a crock that is. Everybody in here is ready. We may not be willing, but we're ready. Yeah. See, there's that old saying, if you ain't done that yet, you know that little word yet? Oh, I haven't hustled the Broadway yet. I haven't ended up in county jail yet. I haven't, like, stolen from... I haven't lost my girl. I haven't lost the house. Got slung out. Yet. Use that little word, yet. Y-E-T. You know what it means? You're eligible too. That's what it means. You see? Don't clap on your own, love. Someone will throw you a fish. I got a smart mouth. I'm sorry. But word yet. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, my life was in ruins. You know, I'd ruined everything in my life, like this beautiful book talks about, ruined. You know, everything in my life was ruined. If in fact there was anything still working in my life, all it really meant was I hadn't got to it yet. You know, I was ruining something else first. Oh, I would get to it, but I was just ruining and screwing something else up first. You know, I just hadn't got to it yet. That little word ruin, man, R-U-I-N. That's what I did, ruined everything. Today I get out of my own bloody way. I let the old man run the show. You know, and the old man runs my life for me, and he runs it pretty good. My life's in perfect running order today. You know, because I get out of the way and let the old HP run my life. And that little word run, R-U-N, right? That's how you spell run, R-U-N. You spell ruin, R-U-I-N. Do you see any difference in those two words? You take I out of ruin and it turns to run. You take that I and put it into run and it turns to ruin. That tells me something. I got to get out of the bloody way. You see, because I ruin it. God runs it for me. It's another thing I never heard until I got here. I never ever heard the term a God of your understanding. As you understand God. I never knew that. No one had ever said that to me. I'd never ever heard that, a God of your understanding, as you understand God, until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I never heard that. I just never heard that. Never ever. And I'd been in all kinds of situations. You know, I'd been in all kinds of, like, you know, I was with the Maharishi in the Beatles area, and the gurus and the Buddhists, and I'd been, you know, dragged up a Catholic. And I haven't come to offend anybody tonight, but, you know, I mean, I'd never ever heard, nobody had ever said, a God of your understanding. See, that's, I've never heard. Well, what does that mean? Even when you told me, I didn't even know what it meant. Every understanding I'd ever had of God was somebody else's indoctrination into me. See, of their understanding of God, or their thing, not mine. I never even knew what it meant. What you got to do? Rotten shirt. Nice tush. Never had a God. See, I was defunct in every area. God, God of my understanding. No. Never had an understanding of God. Didn't even know what that meant. You guys have taught me and nurtured me. Working with a sponsor, reading this book, applying these principles, you know, gradually, slowly, that awakening. Mine is, has been the awakening variety. Not an experience, you know, semi-experience maybe. But, you know, I had an awakening. I never knew anything about God. You know, that fearful, threatening, punishing God that I grew up with was out to get me, man. Everything I did, the fear of God had been installed in me. Not a loving God, not a God that I could turn to, not a God that was like there nurturing me and guiding me and running my life. That wasn't what I grew up with. A fearful, threatening, punishing God. Couldn't do a thing. Couldn't do a thing, man. I couldn't do a thing. The fear of God had been instilled in me. I couldn't even play with the old ding-a-ling, man. I couldn't. They said, don't touch that, you'll go blind. Did you get that? Well, you know I did anyway. Yeah. When I found out how good it felt, I thought, oh, I'll risk one eye. Yeah. But you guys said, let go and let God. I went, what? I said, turn it over to God. I said, what? I said, pray to God. I said, what? Are you mad? Pray to God? If I pray to him, he'll know where I am. I've been ducking God all my life. Pray to God. He'd have gone, there you are, I've been looking for you, Zap. You know? Pray to God. Uh-uh, no, you know, uh-uh. And that's gradually kept coming back. Gradually this process, this beautiful process worked. You know, and gradually things. Now, how my awakening started, and I play around with these words, but, you know, how my awakening started was that, you know, I don't know about you, but I was so manic and volcanic when I got here. You know, I was just crazy inside. I was crazy. All my life people had told me I was crazy. I never knew, never took anything, any notice of it. We don't, do we? We don't take notice of what we're being told. All my life people had told me I was nuts. All my life people had told me I was crazy. You know, and I didn't take any notice. I thought, what the hell are they talking about? You know, why are they picking on me? A good friend of mine was a guy called Keith Moon. He played drums for The Who, right? He died of this disease. He didn't get it. He didn't get the gift that we all got. I don't know why he didn't get it. I don't care why he didn't get it. I'm just glad I did. But he died of this disease. He turned around to me one day. He went, "Hey, you're mad, you are. You're nuts, you are. You ought to be locked up, you did. And when somebody like Mooney thinks you're nuts, he ought to tell you something." You see? But it don't with us. And it didn't with me. And I was, like, walking around one day and I had this devil inside me. You know, I just felt like this Linda Blair type character that had this devil in me, you know, because that's how I felt all the time. I felt weird and I felt like crazy and you guys didn't seem to understand and, you know, you didn't do weird stuff like me, you know. And then one day I just yelled out, "Get out, devil!" You know, and I went, "Ooh, maybe that was an experience." I like, G-O-D, oh, wow, that means God, that's God, G-O-D, get out, devil. Oh, well, that's what I'll do, I'll have that as my God then. And that's what I did. I walked around going, "God, get out, devil, God," you know, and I walked around using it as a mantra like that. I don't know what you guys thought about that, but that's what I did, you know. And then I kept coming back, and I heard somebody say in a meeting, God could mean group of drunks, you know. I went, wow, group of drunks, I like that, I think I'll have that as a God now. Yeah, I'll switch to that God. Yeah, they said I could have a God of what I like. That's what I'm going to have now, group of drunks, right, that's my God now. So I stuck around and I had that as a God for a while. Then I heard somebody say God could mean good orderly direction. You know, I went, oh, I like that better. I think I'll have that now. And I switched to that one too. Kept switching this God and it kept better and better. And that's what's happened in my life and in my progress. You know, I switched to a loving God, a God who loves me and nurtures me and is there for me. Doesn't do stuff to me. Doesn't shoot crap at me all the time. You know, doesn't do all that stuff I used to blame him for. Just doesn't do it. I know we think he does sometimes, don't we? I sponsor a guy who just broke his leg, for Christ's sake. I said, "What happened?" He said, "God done it." I went, "What?" He said, "God's done it." I said, "What do you mean God done it? God's way of slowing me down," he said. I said, "God broke your leg to slow you down." He said, "Must have done." I said, "What happened?" He said, "I was walking along the street and I walked into the fire hydrant." What a dick. He did. I mean, he did. He broke his shin bone, you know, and he had one of them big plaster casts on his leg. I said, "God broke your leg? God don't need to use a fire hydrant. He can come direct, man, you know." But we say that stuff, don't we? Think God does it. I don't believe that anymore. You know, God's my dad, God's my father, I'm a son of God, I'm a child of a loving father, like we do when we, you know, join hands at the end of this meeting. We'll probably join hands and someone will lead us in the Lord's Prayer and we'll say, "Our Father," you know, "Our Father." So if he's our Father, we must be brothers and sisters, joined together in unity, like our traditions tell us, one alcoholic helping another. See that God there today is there. You know, he's my father, for heaven's sake. I got a 10-year-old boy. I just visited him yesterday in Vista. You know, I'm his dad, I'm his father, you know. I don't do stuff to him. I don't leap out at him in the dark, see if he's serene. You know, I mean, I don't do that. I don't take his board away from him to see if he appreciates having it. I don't know, I want to give him and provide him and nurture him. See, my father does the same. And he provides me with these tools of sobriety that I never knew nothing about. This beautiful book, you know, and the tools that we have around here and the things that we can do around here, you know. And I love doing it. I know at 8 years sobriety, I got to do as much or more to stay sober as what it took to get sober. This is a progressive disease. See, I never knew that. I never knew nothing about that. You know, 8 years down the road, I can't kick back and rest on my laurels and stop doing. It says in this beautiful book, we got a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. You see, I can't lie. It says daily bread, not 3-day-old bread or yesterday bread, daily bread, fresh bread. You know what I mean? And that's what I want, fresh sobriety every day. You know, and I can't kick back. You see, it's much easier to get here than it is to stay here. You see, it's much harder to stay here than it is to get here. You see, ask people around here that can't stay around here. You see, ask those that do. You see, you, people don't stick around here. It's just a fact. It's a unfortunate fact, but it is. You know, 9/10 of the alcoholics don't even get here. 90% of the alcoholics die drunk. You know, 90% of the people that do get here don't stick around. We had the countdown this morning. Did you notice how many people were standing in the beginning and how few were standing towards the end? It was amazing, wasn't it? Didn't it touch you? You know? See, 90% of the work in Alcoholics Anonymous is done by less than 10% of the people. and less than 10% of the people stick here. Does that tell you anything? What do you want to be? You want to be one of the 10% who's a contributing member? You know, who's got commitments and is helping others and doing what it takes to stick around here? You want to be one of the 90% who cruise and don't stick around here? One day drinking again, like this beautiful book says, you'll have no defense against taking that first drink, and then they're gone. And the last thing they wanted to do was drink, you know. And so we're out and drinking again. And I didn't know none of that. Didn't know how to do that. Didn't have a clue. You guys taught me. You guys let me know. You see, I didn't know nothing. I didn't know sober. S-O-B-E-R was staying off booze, enjoying recovery. I didn't know none of that. I didn't know anything like that. You know, they told me, they spelled it out in nice simple words, and I share it with you, the little charade that I do, just to explain exactly what it was for me. He said, you've got to stop doing it. I said, what do you mean, stop doing it? He said, you've got to stop doing it. You've got a disease called alcoholism. The only thing we can do anything is completely, you know, stop doing it. You know? S-T-O-P is stop. I mean, what do you mean, stop? He said, that means sicker than other people. You're one of the sicker than others patrol. I went, oh, is that what stop means? He said, yeah, that's what stop means. I went, oh, well, how do I do that? He said, you get granted a gift. A God-given gift. Oh, I like gifts. What kind of a gift? G-I-F-T, gift. God is forever there. Is that what it means? Yeah, that's what it means. Oh, what's he there for? To help you. Help me? What do you mean now? I don't ask people for help. No, but that's why we got God's help. H-E-L-P, his ever-loving presence. Oh, is that right? Yeah, that's right. Oh, man, well, I'm not all that up on that spiritual stuff. I'm an earth man. You know, I can't be so bloody spiritual that I'm no earthly good. He said, no, that's why we got this program. Program? What program? This program. What program? P-R-O-G-R-A-M. Program. People relying on God, relaying a message. Oh, is that what it means? Yeah, that's what it means. Yeah. Said, where's this program? Said, this book. What book? This book. The big book. Big book? What do you mean, big book? B-I-G-B-O-O-K. What does that mean? It means believing in God beats our old knowledge. That's what it means. Wow. Well, how do I find out about that? You ask. You have to ask. You have to want it. You have to ask for it. Ask? What do you mean, ask? A-S-K. Ask saving kit. That's what it means. You have to ask. Save your ass. Wow. Is that what it means? Yeah. Well, who should I ask? A sponsor. Try a sponsor? What do you mean, sponsor? S-P-O-N-S-O-R. Sponsor. Sober person offering newcomers suggestions on recovery. That's what it means. Oh, man. Oh. Well, what shall I ask him? Ask him what's in this book. Well, what's in the book? The steps. Steps? What do you mean, steps? S-T-E-P-S. Steps. Solution to every problem, sober. Oh, is that right? Yeah, that's right. Do I have to do steps? Of course you got to do steps. Why? Because if you quit drinking and don't use the steps, you go crazy. You go nuts. Nuts? What do you mean, nuts? N-U-T-S. Not using the steps. Oh, man. Well, what have I got to use the steps for? So you stay sober. Sober? What do you mean, sober? S-O-B-E-R. Son of a bitch. Everything's real. Yeah. Yeah. Do you do your steps? Yeah, of course I do steps. Why? Because I've got to do steps. I've got to daily maintain it. Because things take on a new meaning when you get a bit of time around here. You know, you get a bit of time around here, some of us get carried away. Don't realise what's happening, and then fear strikes us. Fear? What do you mean, fear? F-E-A-R. When you get a bit of time around here, that could mean frantic efforts to appear recovered. You know what I'm saying? It's almost like we get a bit of time around here and think we know some crap. You know? Think we've done something so we know how to do it. It's not true. Alcoholics like us do something and then think we know how to do it. You know, it's not true. So I got to do what it takes. I've got to put my own house in order first. You know, that's what it takes. That's what it tells me. Can't give away what you haven't got. You know, got to put our own house in order first. You know, life on life's terms isn't always fair, is it? No one told me it would be, though, did they, you? Fair? Who said anything about fair? If you want fair, go to bloody Pomona. There's a big fair up there. You know what I'm saying? Life on life's terms ain't fair, and it ain't fair for everybody. Don't matter. We've just had, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous start up in Russia a couple of years ago. They got 18 meetings in Russia now. Fabulous, you know? You know in Russia what they call life on life's terms? Tufsky Shitsky. Yeah, that's what they call it. You know, it ain't fair for everybody. I tell the story of the two dudes driving across the desert in their Jeep. Baking hot day, sun blaring down. Jeep breaks down in the middle of the desert. Said, oh, God, we're screwed now. What are we going to do? He said, I don't know. What are you going to do? I don't know either. Just then they see a mountain lion crawl around a rock looking real mean and hungry. Said, oh, hey, what are we going to do? I don't know what to do now. What are you doing? He said, I'm putting on my running shoes, man. He said, putting on your running shoes? What's the good of that? Everyone knows you can't outrun a mountain lion. He said, I ain't got to outrun the mountain lion. I just got to outrun you. Mothers, huh? Yeah. See, we got to put our own house in order here, you know. Put your running shoes on, man. Get your own house going. Do your own work. Do your steps. And in myself, I didn't know that. Well, my time's up. You know, but I want to thank you for coming down here tonight. I want to thank you for inviting me. You're my friends. I love being a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's by far the most important thing I do. You know, nothing else even comes close to it. You know, nothing at all. Nothing comes close. People ask me what I do for a living, I tell them. I stay sober for a living, make money as a hobby. You know, that's what it is. You know, and the program's in this book, this beautiful book. What's in this book is what worked. You know, and that's what those guys who went before us did. They wrote it down in a book, this book. They wrote down what worked for them, what helped them, you know, recover from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body if you're an alcoholic like me. You know, and they put it in this book. And what they put in this book is what worked. That's why they put it in, because it worked. Didn't put no stuff in here that didn't work, because it didn't work, so they didn't put it in. They just put in the stuff that worked. See? There ain't no stuff in here that didn't work, because it didn't work. You won't find nothing in here that didn't work. You can turn to any page you like. Anybody read this book, by the way? That's a good idea. In this book, you won't find any page you turn to, you won't find stuff that don't work. You put it here, 84. It does not say... At 6 months sober, I stopped going to meetings, started hanging out in bars and screwing around with newcomers. It don't say it here. Because it didn't work. So they didn't put it in. They did it, but it didn't work. You know what I mean? So they don't put it in. I was having a little controversy a little while ago with an old fart. I love those old farts in AA. That's all I want to be in my life. My only ambition is to be an old fart in AA. And this guy's 29 years sober, quotes his book, chapter and verse, knows it backwards, told me off for speaking about drugs and pot and stuff like that at an AA meeting. I said, I only talk about stuff that's in the book. He said, where? I said, right in the first page. Go and read your book. You obviously don't know what you're talking about. It's in the book. He said, I do know my book. I said, obviously not. He said, where is it? I said, go and turn to page one. He said, page one, that's Bill's story. I said, that's right, that's where it is. He went, where? I said, go and got this book. Turn to it. Page one. Look, good place here. It says here, here lies a Hampshire grenadier who caught his death drinking cold small beer. A good soldier is ne'er forgot whether he dieth of musket or by pot. He said it don't mean that. I said it does to me. There's a message in this book for everybody, no matter what. I don't care, we're alcoholics. If you're an alcoholic with a drug problem, great. If you're an alcoholic with an overeating problem, great. If you're an alcoholic with all these other issues, great. If you're an alcoholic, that's what we do here. I'm real happy and grateful today that I'm the kind of alcoholic that can carry the message to other alcoholics that have these other issues. I'm an alcoholic that did mountains of drugs, man, and I'm glad that today I'm available to other alcoholics that did mountains of drugs as well, like me. I would hate today to be an alcoholic so closed down that I won't even allow an addict to talk to. Alcoholics don't like the term addicts, and yet the doctor talks about it, don't he? He talks about being addicted to alcohol. Addicted to alcohol. I never ever met an alcoholic who wasn't addicted to alcohol, and yet alcoholics hate that. You know, it says the alcoholic addiction, the habit. We talk about the habit many times in this beautiful book. You see, addicted to alcohol. See, I don't know. All that controversy, you know, doesn't come from addicts coming into Alcoholics Anonymous meetings and talking about their addiction. That's not where it comes from. You know where it comes from? It comes from alcoholics telling other alcoholics not to talk about their other issues. And if you're an alcoholic like me, you know, I don't know what it means not to be talking about alcoholism. You see, I don't know what that means. Everything attached to me is alcoholic. You know, I'm real glad and grateful about that. And I want you guys to know that you're welcome. I welcome your well, I get carried away here sometimes because I just love recovery so much and I don't like to see people go back out there. This message, it says. And this message is whatever, you know, mind-altering chemicals. Alcoholics, if you be alcoholic with these other things, it's a totally different thing if you're not alcoholic. My sponsor puts it the best way I ever heard it. He said, if you're alcoholic, you have a right to as many other dysfunctionalities as you want. You know, if I'm alcoholic, don't tell me I can't be screwed up in food and sex and drugs and everything else. I'm an alcoholic, goddammit. I can be screwed up as many times and many places as I want. You see, however, if you're screwed up in the other areas but don't drink or have a drinking problem, you can't be an alcoholic. You see, therein lies the difference. Oh yeah, I uphold our third tradition and I love it. You know, but alcoholics, see, that's what I love. This message, you know. And you guys have just given me this message. You guys have just given me this message back to me. You guys have, you see, what we do, we come here to these meetings and we relate one alcoholic to another. You see what I'm saying? Now, some of us may not think we're alcoholic. Now, I hope I haven't given anybody alcoholism tonight. Because you catch it, you know, in these rooms. You do know that, don't you? I wasn't an alcoholic till I came here. You know, I caught alcoholism in these rooms. You know. But, you know, we do. We catch alcoholism. So I don't want to have given anybody alcoholism. But they tell me that if you're laughing, you're relating. And if you're relating, there ain't no doubt about you. Believe me. I do not get through to well people. I'm real blessed and grateful to be an alcoholic, a sober member and an active member, and I love you and I thank you for coming here, you know, and I thank you for inviting me here, and keep coming back. God bless.